Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. Welcome back, Chief Tainar Simpson.
Thank you, Robert. It's great to be here.
There are a number of responses to the threat of tariffs by various Indigenous groups. I'd like to start with a statement from the Assembly of First Nations. National Chief Cindy Woodhouse is hoping to travel to the United States to talk with Native American organizations about the tariffs as well as treaty and border mobility rights. Can you break this down for us?
Cindy has been engaged with the National Assembly of American Indians, and she has been talking with the president as well as addressing their assembly at the winter assembly. So her focus is to try to increase trade and economic relationships between the Canadian and the American First Nations. They are called tribes down in the South. So we figured that this would be a good way to basically counter the colonial moves that the American president has been undertaking with the tariffs. So we are trying to say that, Canadian-American divide won't be affecting Canadian and American First Nations. So we're looking to increase our partnership with them, especially in terms of trade.
Do we know the value of that trade? How many dollars are involved?
We do not. We know that First Nations in Canada represent roughly $57 billion towards the national GDP. So a lot of that is in resources and I guess manufacturing. So it would be less than that, obviously, but I think that given the fact that there aren't any duties across the border, there's definitely gains to be made by increasing that flow between First Nations and American tribes.
Chief Woodhouse talks about a treaty. What is she referring to?
Well, we have a number of treaties, but I think the most significant treaty is the Jay Treaty from 1794, which was a catch-all treaty at the time that was meant to basically stop another war between Britain and American forces, because there were a lot of loose ends after the American Revolutionary War that needed to be cleared up in terms of forts and trading and debts that were owed to British companies. So one of the things in the Jay Treaty was the rights for First Nations to freely cross the border, so it wouldn't disrupt the fur trade at the time. So they were given basically free clearance to go either way across the border, and the American side has recognized that up until this day. It's actually been codified in their laws.
My understanding is that the Canadian-born Indigenous people can enter the United States for things like jobs, to study, retirement, investing, or immigration. Can you explain how we went from trade over pelts to what we're talking about today?
Well, I think it was all about the economy. And they, at the time, the thinking was they didn't want to disrupt the economy, especially since Europe was needing the furs. And they didn't want to disrupt the merchants, which had a oversized weight in the government and government issues. So I guess those things that you just mentioned, like immigration for work, for study, interesting, not just for leisure, to travel purposes in general. So they were very specific reasons. And I know in Alderville, we have a number of members in the States who have moved there and become citizens there because of the Jay Treaty. So that's why we have a number of members in the States.
It seems to me, when you look at it, it says that you have to have a lot of paperwork to prove who you are and that you're legitimate, and then you're able to cross. And it doesn't sound easy, and yet we talk about it as we can freely cross. Can you maybe explain some of the bureaucratic sides of this?
Yes, so for First Nations, generally presenting your status card at a land border will be enough to enter the States. And usually you don't need to have anything more than that. A letter from Chief and Council on official letterhead acknowledging that you are a First Nation member of your First Nation, it should also be enough. So if you have both of those, then you should be able to cross. But none of this will work at an airport. You can't fly into the States under the Jay Treaty. It has to be at a land crossing.
Can you give us a bit of a timeline as to how the Jay Treaty has evolved?
Yes. So I guess in the past, when it was first passed by the Federalist Party, George Washington's party, it was intended primarily to set the record straight, to make sure that the loose ends were tied up, and the Indigenous aspects of it were very minimal. They weren't the main focus of it. But today, pretty much all those other aspects have dropped off. They've been finalized, and the only current, I guess, ramifications of the Jay Treaty holds is now for the Indigenous aspects and the free border crossing. So it's been tested in the Canadian courts in the 60s and then the 80s. And then there was also a Supreme Court ruling that basically said that we aren't going to recognize it. But again, like you can't just say that. So they, for the Canadian side, they do not accept American Indigenous people to move to Canada the same way the States accepts Canadian First Nations to move there. So both countries deal with the Jay Treaty differently. But generally, what we know we can do is we can cross, we can live in the States, and we do not have to pay duty. So those are the main points that are still there. And some people have linked it also to dual citizenship. It doesn't mean dual citizenship, but it is a path to attaining American citizenship.
I understand, though, in 2016, a Canadian Senate committee on Indigenous people looked at the challenges with respect to the border crossing. And in fact, the United Nations Declaration on Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act also has weighed in on this ability to cross the borders. Where are we today?
Well, I think it's similar to a lot of Indigenous issues in Canada, where First Nations take a different stand and a different perspective than the federal government takes. So we know our rights under the Jay Treaty, and these rights existed prior to the Jay Treaty, prior to colonialism and the settling of our lands by Europeans. So to us, the Jay Treaty represents what we have always known, that there's no artificial border between Canada and the States, where we were always able to cross. I know our people in the 1700s were originally in the States as part of the Shawnee Confederacy, and then we crossed over into Canada. So there's been multiple times where we've crossed over and back. So to us, it's just an affirmation that we can continue to travel in the way that we have.
So how serious a threat then are these recent moves by the American government to mobility?
Well, I would probably take an act of Congress to remove any aspects of the Jay Treaty that are currently enshrined in American law. I believe it's even in the Constitution. So it would be hard for them to take that back. But, you know, the current president is he's tearing down all these walls, and he's doing things that no one ever thought of doing in the past. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility that he might go after the Jay Treaty. But I don't think that that's high on his priority list at the moment. So we don't see anything until maybe one of his, advisors tells him about it, and then he'll go off on it. But we really don't know that he can do anything. He's very random in his moves.
Going back to the tariffs, Chief Woodhouse has said that the tariffs will be harmful. And we've heard a lot of organizations describe the negative impacts of tariffs. How would Indigenous people be affected in your mind?
Well, I think a lot of it would have to do with resource extraction. Some of the development that we've been doing, especially out west in BC. A lot of their economy could dry up, especially if there's no longer a demand for their product south of the border. So it would affect different First Nations communities differently. But I think the First Nations that have really advanced their manufacturing and extraction abilities, they're going to be the most affected. But for First Nations that maybe aren't so involved in those industries, they won't be as affected as much. I mean, things, you know, if they're bad already, that's it's hard for it to get much worse. But it's definitely going to put a dampen on the overall Indigenous economy across Canada.
The Canadian Council for Indigenous Business refers to the historic economic relationship between various First Nations across North America and Central America. Now, the Business Council refers to the Jay Treaty, but it also calls for new trade opportunities both interprovincially and globally. But it also calls for government support of Indigenous workers and businesses. Why is there a need for a unique program for Indigenous people?
Well, I think it gets to the fact that Indigenous communities have been left behind historically. We have a lot of catching up to do. In the past, these major issues, you know, might not have really affected us to the degree they are now. But I think the main thing we got to keep in mind is that for any industry or businesses to operate in Canada, they need consent from the First Nations who have that treaty and rights holders, rights in those communities and territories, sorry. So I think that the fact that a lot of First Nations aren't up to speed and they are overwhelmed by the amount of consultation requests that come in, there isn't a capacity for First Nations as a whole to respond quickly to these urgent needs. So I think that you do need a special approach for First Nations to help us basically increase the capacity across the board to engage in these industries because they are needed for the larger national and international trade going out there. So basically, we don't want to have to hold up the process because we aren't able to consult in an effective manner. So I know Alderville, we've put a lot into our consultation protocol and our initiatives. So we're one of the First Nations that are, you know, taking the bull by the horns and really effectively engaging with all of the proponents. But I know there are several First Nations out there that aren't. So they're going to get left behind, or, you know, just business isn't going to happen. And that's the detriment of the overall nation of Canada.
Because I can imagine some people who are listening right now would say, look, the government will probably introduce a whole slew of programs to help business, to help individuals. Why can't Indigenous business just fall under that umbrella?
Well, because of the Indian Act, First Nations aren't allowed to leverage their commodities and lands in the same way that everyone else in Canada is able to. So a First Nation might have a large net worth, but they can't use that net worth as leverage to secure funding for businesses or loans to start up businesses. So we're at a major disadvantage where everyone else in Canada can leverage their what they own and their lands to secure funding. So it's something that we're designed basically to fail. And these are things that really need to be addressed sooner rather than later.
The Business Council is calling for early engagement of Indigenous people and the need for consent and equity. How deep is the concern that Indigenous people may be left out?
I think that there's a major concern because there isn't quite that national push to get everyone on the same page. We're all kind of fending for ourselves. So as I was saying earlier, like we really need to have that national approach to get everyone brought up to speed and to have the capacity to engage quickly and efficiently because things are happening so fast these days that you know, it's very easy to get inundated and in over your head if you're not on everything all the time. I know for me personally, it's one of the reasons I don't really get breaks in my life. It's all of these people, they need responses, and if you aren't able to respond, then it just doesn't happen.
Now, we've seen in the past, in the very recent past, in fact, the Assembly of First Nations coming together and not being able to agree on, say, something like child welfare or other things. How do you see it now in terms of the pressure on First Nations across the country to become unified in order to get a response to what's going to possibly take place?
Well, I think it's very important. I think these tariff threats have brought us together. They've started us thinking that, we do need to come together. We're stronger when we stand together, and we're weaker when we're divided. So I think these conversations are happening now, and whether or not the tariffs actually do go into effect, I think that it's been made well aware that we need to get our acts together. We need to work together, and we have to identify what this means. What are the areas? Can we trade within ourselves? What about those interprovincial trade barriers that we know happened? We need to bring those down as well. So I think the more we can work together and basically become, I guess, less American dependent. We anything to be able to do that is a step we should be taking.
But you were mentioning earlier, and I thought this was very interesting, the possibility of trade between American tribes and Indigenous First Nations in Canada. I mean, that almost seems like a loophole in all of this. Can you elaborate on how this might work, and could it possibly be something that skirts around all these other agreements and all these other threats?
Well, definitely. So if you had major manufacturing or other commercial endeavors owned by the First Nations of Canada and the tribes in the States, and then they started trading directly without tariffs and duties, that would definitely be what Trump would consider a loophole in his tariffs. And that would be something that, once he realizes that's happening, he would probably make moves to shut it down. But it would be a big fight that would definitely have to go to the Supreme Court in the States. And I think that it would irk both nations at the highest levels, because then everyone realizes they're losing out on the taxes that they would generally be getting. They're losing out on the duties. But overall, for First Nations and the tribes in the States, it would be very beneficial. And you would think it would be beneficial to Canada as well, just to keep that trade flowing. So this is why we need to have all levels of government come together to come up with the best idea, because that's something that we would definitely all be for. But it would be great to have the provinces and the federal government on board as well.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue our talk about the tariffs and the impact on Indigenous people, especially in Alderville. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned to hear more conversations towards reconciliation with Tainar Simpson. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM, your local source for news and information. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I hope you're enjoying our chat today. I'm Robert Washburn, and I'm here with Tainar Simpson, the Chief of Alderville First Nations. We are so glad you're joining us. We're back with Chief Tainar Simpson.
Thanks, Robert.
I want to come back to National Chief Cindy Woodhouse and her public statements. She says there is a right to maintain, and I'm quoting here now, our spiritual, cultural, political, economic, and social relations between Indigenous people on both sides of the border. Now, this seems to be about a lot more than just economics.
Well, I think it's because as an anthropologist, I've always been keenly interested in this. So there's been large migrations throughout Turtle Island over the centuries, thousands of years. Like the Navajo are actually related to the Dene of Northern Alberta and Northwest Territories. We know this because they are in the same language group. They share genetics. So there's always been these mass migrations of large populations that's well before there was an American-Canadian border. And we've had free flow of thoughts, cultural ideas, food, like if the way corn corn was able to spread around. So we know that there was trade amongst even like with South America and Mexico. So these were very fluid borders. And, you know, we had our own treaties, often in terms of wampum belts, where we had understandings with the neighboring First Nations, which territories were, what our rights on the lands were. So we always had these ideas of treaty territories because we had treaties with each other long before Europeans had came over.
I'd like to bring all of this conversation now back to local, and you've already alluded to some of the things that's going on in Alderville. Does Alderville have any companies or businesses that deal with the Americans?
I'm going to say not on a large scale. We do have several businesses, but they're mostly for local, like maybe county, Toronto at the most, I'm going to say. So I don't see it affecting us majorly from a business perspective. But of course, from Indigenous overall, it's going to make everyone's items more expensive. We might not see some items stocked on the shelves anymore. So I think it's going to affect the us as individuals more than it might affect our businesses. But I'm sure someone listening from Alderville is going to say, hey, wait, I'm highly affected by it. So you know, there could be some companies that are greatly affected by it, with losing their supply or perhaps their people who they're selling to.
What do you see as the role then for Alderville Council in the upcoming days and weeks as things unfold?
Well, I put out a directive to all of our staff to try to buy Canadian wherever possible. Basically, not to buy American. So we want to know that, make our voice heard, hit them where it hurts, basically. If to Trump, it's all about money. So if we can hit them where it hurts there, like we, if we can't buy Canadian, I'd like to buy anywhere other than the States, just to let them know that, you know, we can't really be pushed around. We are going to stand up to the tariffs, and it's going to be, it's hurting them probably more than it's going to be hurting us. So if with his other rhetoric about making us the 51st state, like this is, it's a very big blow to Canadian American relations, and we want to make it clear where we stand. We definitely stand opposed to what they're trying to do in the States.
There is a wave of patriotism sweeping the nation. Some Indigenous people have mixed reactions to Canada and things like Canada Day. How would you characterize the current feelings towards the country by First Nations from your discussions with others in the face of these tariffs?
Well, I think it's moved the needle a bit. Of course, we have a checkered history with the Crown and the federal government of Canada, but I think that overall, we've sort of rallied together. We know that anything that hurts Canada as a country will hurt us as well. So I think, you know, we realize that we're standing up against a bully to the south, and like First Nations are stronger together, we're stronger with our allies. And in this case, Canada would be an ally in the face of this threat.
How do you personally feel about Canada right now as we face this threat?
Well, as someone who's lived all over Ontario in big cities, I've got a good sense of Canada. A lot of my, you know, longtime friends aren't First Nations. They're people I've known my whole life. And, you know, I don't like to see people hurting. I don't like to see people suffering economically. So I think this is something that we can all rally behind. I feel like, you know, what's good for Canada is good for us. What's good for us is good for Canada. So personally, I feel like it's brought us closer together as a country, because we were always talking about our differences and our disputes. But then in times like this, it really makes you realize the things we do have in common. And maybe we should be talking more about our commonalities than our differences.
Do you think the Americans will make a serious move to make Canada a 51st state?
Well, I was just at a Lands and Resources symposium, and that was on the discussion, like not official discussion, but people just chatting around, like what are they thinking? And a lot of jokes were made, but at the same time, a lot of fear. And like I was like, yeah, well, that's all fine until the invasion happens. And people were like, yeah, well, that might happen. So I think that people are taking these threats real. Like we have to be able to protect the national sovereignty of Canada. I mean, if the they, I mean, look what happened with Russia and Ukraine. No one would have thought Russia would invade Ukraine. No one would think that the States is going to invade Canada. I mean, it's funny until it happens. So we definitely have to be prepared for anything. But the rhetoric coming from the president is it's alarming and it's scary. And we really don't know what's bluster or what's real.
If you were sitting down with the members of Alderville and you were going to give them some advice going forward, what would it be?
I think we have to be prepared. I would say, you know, get your shopping done, make sure all your stocks are full. You know, just make sure you've got gasoline. If you got like generators, make sure you got gasoline. I just think we have to be prepared for anything. Prices could spike. So if you know that there's stuff you use regularly, you maybe stock up 3, 4, or 5 months in advance of what you'll need. It'll probably end up saving you money in the past, in the future. We don't know if things are going to disappear from the shelves. And in terms of like finances, like I'm sure that the economy is going to be hit. So I don't know, maybe move your investments to something that's a little bit more tariff I guess proof. So yeah, it's just maybe basically get your ducks in order. And that's good advice anytime, really. But it's just more important now, given the uncertainty of everything.
Do you have some public service announcements for us this time?
Yes, I do. I've got a few events and announcements to make. So I guess I'm trying to figure out everything in chronological order. Okay, so on February 24th, we have our play and learn at 10 a.m. So we would ask that you contact the band office if you would like to sign up for that. February 25th, we have a drop-in tea and visit for all members with Yana at the Hilltop Wellness Hub. And on February 27th and 28th, we have a money management workshop and financial counseling. If especially if you're interested in the First Nations Market Housing Fund coming up and purchasing a house, I would urge everyone to attend that who is thinking along those lines. So please contact Christian if you would like to sign up for that. On March 1st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., we have Celebrating the Circle of Joy, which is going to be a coming together in ceremony, teachings, food, and activities. So this is going to be at the community center. So please sign up by February 24th if you wish to participate in that. There might be some exceptions. And also on March 20th, we have another episode of Kids in the Kitchen. And if you'd like your little ones to sign up for that in the afternoon, please contact Jill Fanning. And of course, a reminder that every Thursday is Men's Drum Night, 6 to 8 p.m. at Hilltop at the Wellness Hub. So any men that want to get into drumming or continue, please let Aiden know. And I'd also just like to send out, and for any members that don't know, we have a full-time nurse practitioner who is practicing out of the health building. So if you have any aches or pains and you don't have a current healthcare provider, please contact the band office and hopefully the nurse practitioner can help you out. And I just want to let everyone know that the election date for the next Alderville elections has been set for July 18th. So we have moved it out of the same weekend as the powwow. So it's going to be the week after the powwow. And that is my notes and announcements for the month.
Chief Taynor Simpson, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Taynor Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Tainar Simpson.